You won't get no dessert till you clean up your plate, so eat it.
Oh, this is my favorite thing to talk about, quite honestly, Bill.
Food.
Food and some of the myths that are out there surrounding food. We have a couple of food scientists on the line with us, Paul Dawson and Brian Sheldon. They have written a book called Did You Just Eat That? And we're going to find out all about food myths. Guys, how are you?
Great.
Doing good. Thanks, Bill and Wendy.
All right, so let's just start right out with that five-second rule, because we've all done it. I think it depends what it is that you drop and whether or not you drop it on carpeting or a floor that's a hard floor. What do you say?
You want to take that, Paul?
Yeah. You're kind of right there. The floor, the surface matters, but if there's bacteria there, it's going to be transferred immediately. So the more contact with the floor, if there's bacteria there, there'll be more transfer. We've tested carpet, tile, and wood. And interesting that we inoculated those surfaces with Salmonella typhimurium and then dropped food on it and picked it up within 5, 30, or 60 seconds. And while there was more transfer, the longer stayed there, there was significant transfer immediately. There were some differences due to the surface. The carpet, as you might expect, if you inoculate it, drop food or dirt, soil it with germs, then it'll kind of enter into the carpet and not be at the surface of the carpet. So then there's less contact with the food, so there's really less transfer. But the downside of that is, in the real world in particular, if you spilled a drink or something on the carpet, that gives the bacteria protection and can grow and stay there longer.
Yeah.
So really depends on the surface, you're right. But as far as the five-second rule, that's a myth. It's transferred immediately.
I hope everybody understands what we're talking about when we say the five-second rule. It's the belief that if you drop some food, if you pick it up and then you could eat it within 5 seconds, you're safe from any bacteria. But I think for the five-second rule to work, guys, the bacteria itself has to believe in the five-second rule and wait for 5 seconds before it jumps on your Pop-Tart, right?
Yeah. Obviously, they don't believe in it. And that, interestingly enough, it really comes down to the surface is important, but more importantly is what organisms are there. If it's the 99% of the organisms that exist that are weak in culture, presently, they're not pathogenic. They're not going to cause disease. But if it's that 1%, and that Salmonella, Listeria, E. coli, or if it's, a flu bug, a virus, those are the organisms that if they're there and they can be transmitted as well or transferred. So that is problematic in that case. It's just a matter of we don't always know not only what the population is, but at what concentration it is and what type of organism. So those are key factors.
How come E. coli, Salmonella, your various other Listeria, they're so prevalent now? And then when I think back of when I was a kid, we'd order a pizza on a Friday night. We'd leave it out on the counter until Saturday morning and eat it. We made a potato salad and perhaps left it out on a picnic table in the sun. It's like we know more now, but we're getting sick more. Why is that?
Sure. Yeah, I guess you kind of alluded to part of it. We are better at detecting foodborne illness. The sampling, the detection methods can pick up much lower levels of bacteria. We're also keeping track of how many people get sick much better. So there's that side of it. The other side of it is the bacterial side. You mentioned earlier about the five-second rule, bacteria participating in that. Bacteria are constantly modifying themselves and changing and adapting. So that's a great thing about being a microbiologist. There's always going to be bacteria that are mutating or changing so they can exist and still survive. So there's always going to be that. So I would say the combination, but mostly probably you could still probably leave the pizza out, and as long as you don't do the same thing you did before, you'll probably be okay. It's just kind of a gamble. Wouldn't recommend it, especially someone who's immunocompromised, an elderly person, or someone who's on medication.
We're talking to Paul. Go on. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say it also is somewhat dependent on how good the cook is and how clean they are.
Yeah, that's true.
Have they done the proper hand washing and sanitizing of surfaces? And if they've done all that, again, Paul, as I agree with, it's not a great practice to leave those things out. But you do, and they've cooked the product sufficiently. You've killed those organisms by virtue of baking it, you know, that pizza in the oven. And now it's a matter of how contaminated does it get? How much handling did it have when you were slicing it? Everybody was pulling a slice off. Did they contribute to contaminating the remaining pizza slices that you're going to be eating the next day after you've left it out all night? So, again, a few other factors to consider.
We're talking about...
Did you ever get sick? You ever get sick when you were doing that?
No, never. I'm not kidding.
Never. You never got sick. Okay. Well, you're pretty healthy then.
You make me really grossed out about eating anything now because it's like you think of people like spiral ham for Easter. Everybody uses their hand and pulls off a piece, and who knows where their hands have been. Now I'm grossed out about eating anything.
Paul Dawson and Brian Sheldon are our guests, food researchers, authors of Did You Just Eat That? Available wherever books about what you can eat and what you can't eat are sold. We'll take a quick break and then pick this up in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we are talking to food scientists, which is a cool profession, Paul Dawson and Brian Sheldon, food researchers and authors of Did You Just Eat That? And there are experiments set up in this book, things you can recreate if you so choose. I have a question for you guys. I love to cook. I wash my hands 100 times throughout the process, and yet I will bring something in, and Bill, my partner, will not eat it because he flat out says, you have a dog.
Right.
Have you found anything in your studies that someone who has a dog, which is like 80% of the listeners, does it make your food more problematic?
Paul has dogs. I'll let him answer this.
Yeah. Well, as long as the dogs aren't preparing the food or you're not letting them lick the bowls before you cook it. Now, we didn't find anything. I don't know if there's any information out there that people who have dogs are producing food or creating food or having more foodborne illness than people who don't. I guess quick answer is no.
Cats too, same deal with cats.
Cats walk on your counters though. That is different.
Yeah. My neighbor has cats, and I've been in their home for dinner, and they always tell me, oh, the cats don't get up on the countertops, and before they turn around, there's a cat on the countertop. So one other point is that, like humans, it doesn't matter if it's a dog or a cat or a human, that, you know, we generate dust and bioaerosols by virtue of breathing, and of course the dogs and the animals are breathing as well, and they emit this into the air, and it becomes airborne, and it can stay there for quite some time, and they can transmit viruses, bacteria, and things just like we humans can. So they could contribute to contaminating the surface or food, just like we can contribute to that by just simply breathing.
Again, I'm not eating anything or cooking anything.
Cats have litter boxes, too, oftentimes, so that's another maybe another issue.
Yeah, how about that? Here's one I think everyone can relate to. It's a little kid's birthday party, and as Kevin is blowing out the candles, there might be a little extra something in the blowing out process.
There's definitely something in the extra in the blowing out process, because just by talking or breathing, we're emitting bioaerosols that are carrying bacteria from our mouth, oral cavity. So certainly when the action of blowing, you're going to generate more. And we verified that or demonstrated that in our study where we had blowing candles out and collected the icing where they had been blown out. In fact, we tried to simulate a birthday party by having our subjects eat a piece of pizza first to get the saliva going.
Mm-hmm.
And then had them blow candles out, and there was a significant deposit of oral bacteria on the cake.
You may think it's icing, but it's not. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
That's good, yeah.
Don't encourage your guys.
Study, one individual, I guess he had been salivating quite a bit because Paul had fed them pizza ahead of time just to get the juices moving in their mouths. But this one individual, he actually spewed out about 37,000 bacteria per sample that we had evaluated. That's about a 12,000% increase in the bacteria compared to our controls. So again, it can be significant as far as the populations that are spewed out there.
All right, here's what we're doing from now on, people. For birthdays, the birthday person will get a cupcake with the candle to blow out. Everybody else will share
the
cake.
That's fair. That's fair. Guys, what about this? I'm sure you've been to a nice fancy restaurant where you know the chef, before serving you whatever you've ordered, takes the ladle and samples a little bit of it. What does he do with that spoon afterwards? Does he throw it away, or does he clean it, or does he put it back in the soup?
Well, funny you should say that, because Brian and I are just talking about that. There's a video out there. You may have not seen it. I think it. I don't want to say the name of the place, but there's a place that sells soup, and you kind of go up and get your own soup, and it has a picture of a man, or a video of a man, taking the ladle and sampling the soups and putting the ladle back into the soup.
Oh, my God.
No, you don't want to put it back, because you're again transferring your oral bacteria back in the soup, and especially if it's being held at a warm temperature, you're probably going to get growth of whatever is back in there that you just inoculated, if you will. So, and I think Brian mentioned before, probably the real risk is more of a viral or some type of illness rather than your typical foodborne pathogens we hear about. You mentioned Listeria, Salmonella, E. coli. It's more like the transmissible diseases, cold, flu, and so forth.
All right. Thanksgiving is coming up, and of course, people have the question, to stuff or not to stuff? I always stuff the turkey. I do it the morning of and put it in the oven. Did you find anything about that in your studies?
Well, we didn't study that. That's been documented repeatedly, and recommendations is never to do that, and always to cook it outside of the turkey, and just because, again, being inside, does it actually reach the proper cook endpoint temperature? And it's almost like an insulated thing. Things at the center of, be it a piece of meat or whatever, the center of that turkey are going to be the slowest cooking, and therefore the coldest. It's going to take a lot longer to cook them. Now, if you're going to continue to do that, make sure you use a meat thermometer.
I do.
And assure that you reach a proper endpoint temperature, 165 or above.
I got to check the stuffing. I usually just stick it in the thigh, and I don't know. Again, this is something we've always stuffed our turkeys, and no one ever left our table sick. So are we more worried about things, or are there just more bacteria, as you mentioned?
Well, again, back to the people who are, would you start with a clean product? You mentioned the cooking, get to the right temperature. Those are safeguards. And then the immunity of the individual, how healthy they are. So if you have an elderly person who may not have a strong immune system eating dinner with you, you may want to rethink that. But, yeah.
Put the old people in their own room, Wendy. Don't let them sit with everybody else.
I don't have room at my table anyway. We have to do a card table, so maybe I could just limit my guests.
Yeah, do that.
One other point that we haven't mentioned yet, and again, Paul mentioned about these organisms evolving and actually becoming more virulent or more resistant, but the use or overuse of antibiotics, such that they're becoming more antibiotic resistant to those antibiotics that we normally take for when we're sick, such that when we are sick and we with one of these organisms, they're not as susceptible, and they're more to the antibiotic that we're being given, and therefore our condition can worsen. And oftentimes the hospital, they don't run tests to determine the sensitivity of the particular organism to a host of different antibiotics. So it's kind of a guesswork, and that while they're guessing at it and we're getting worse, obviously it's not the right approach. The right approach would be that we handle our food properly such that it doesn't become contaminated, and we, you know, cook to the right temperatures, we store properly, we clean and sanitize our surfaces, and just use good food practice. You know, our last chapter gives you some hints of what you can do to properly handle food, and so that'd be something good that the readers can. We don't leave them often in the lurch. We do provide some alternatives at the end.
Paul, Brian, you guys have made us both very, very hungry. No doubt about that.
You know, I think you guys are going to be responsible for the obesity epidemic in America, because no one's going to want to eat after reading this book.
Did You Just Eat That? Is the name of the book. Paul Dawson and Brian Sheldon are the authors. Gentlemen, thanks for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely.
I'm looking at it right now on Amazon, so you can order it. Did you just eat that? You can also order some samples of E. coli and Listeria if you'd like to throw that in your cart as well.
People who ordered this also ordered this.
Right.